And this is Jordan. Welcome back to Major Musings.
Welcome back. This is a very special episode that I've been very excited about. If anyone listened to the previous episode, you could tell from my voice when I was announcing it that I was very much looking forward to it.
Yeah.
So this week we're featuring the Lebanese American artist Rania Matar. And we're actually recording this intro after having done the interview with her on Zoom. So if you notice a change in the sound as we transition to the actual interview, that'll be the reason why.
Yep. And then I do just want to say that we had to do this interview while I was on break at work, unfortunately. So it is mostly Maria who is talking with her, but I was able to be on for a little bit. So it's a really great conversation, though, and I know Maria was thrilled with how it came out, so I hope you all enjoy it as well.
Yeah, enjoy, everyone. So without further ado, I think I say that in the interview as well, so you're going to hear that twice, a third time. Without further ado, here's the interview. Welcome, everyone. I am so excited and very honored to be introducing our guest for this week's episode, the wonderful photographer Rania Matar. I'll let her provide us with some background information about herself. I'll just start off with a brief introduction that you can find on her website. She was born and raised in Lebanon, like myself, before moving to the United States in 1984. As a Lebanese-born American woman and mother, Matar's cultural background, cross-cultural experience, and personal narrative inform her photography. She has dedicated her work to exploring issues of personal and collective identity through imagery of women and girls going through adolescence, both in the U.S. and the Middle East. So without further ado, welcome, Rania, and thank you so much for being here with us.
Well, hi, everybody, and thank you so much for inviting me, Maria.
Yeah, of course.
You're the first person who pronounces my name right. So, as you said, I'm originally from Lebanon, from Palestinian parents, and I moved to the U.S. in 1984. Trained as an architect and worked as an architect for many years. And married and had kids. And then I got into photography, honestly, early on when I was pregnant with my fourth child to take better pictures of my kids. I had done a lot of art in college in parallel as with my architecture studies, but not really photography. And I fell in love with the medium. And I ended up making pictures of my kids that were very different from what I thought I would be making. And it's really paved the way for me to stick to photography ever since. Right. I started photographing in the Middle East in after September 11. And I learned all this intimacy in photography really through the pictures I made, early pictures I made of my children. So since then, they've inspired all my work anyway, even though they don't want to be part of it.
So. But I mean, it's all, it, you know, we complain when mothers take photographs, but in secret, we love them. I found out about your work. I've been an admirer for a little over 4 years now, and I would say maybe Jordan around the same time, just because she's heard me talk about you and mention you several times. When I moved to Gainesville, for most of the listeners who kind of know this by now, I was very confused. And, you know, it was a very overwhelming transition. And I walked into the Harn Museum, which is the University of Florida's museum, for the very first time. And I walked in there with my mom. And lo and behold, there was an exhibition on the Middle East, and there were photographs of your work in there, and it was an otherworldly experience. It was very emotional because, you know, we'd lived through the 2006 war, so to see that documented and to see you represented in America when I just moved there, it meant the world to me, even though it was completely unplanned. So ever since then, I've just been such a huge fan.
Love that story. Thank you. I mean, it's an honor to be part of that show, actually. And I had worked with Carol McCusker earlier, and she kind of remembered my work. So it was really, truly an honor to be part of this show. And I think it was something where she, you know, she took a big risk and made a statement with that exhibition. So it was incredible for me to be part of that.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, it was It was really great. And the fact that I got to work with her years later with Carol, and I talked about you, and she happily gave me your email, and that's how we got in touch. So I'm really glad that things worked out the way that they did. But yeah, so your photography is so impressive, and I mean you really focus on so many different things, but at the same time you try to create this universality through individuality at the same time. And I guess we can start off talking about one series that I really love of yours. It's one of your earlier works. It's Invisible Children, and some of the photographs were at the Harn Museum of that series. So I was wondering if you wanted to give a bit of a backstory on that for
Yeah,
listeners.
absolutely. Actually, it's not that early of the work. My earliest work that was at the Harn was My Ordinary Lives, which was more of a black and
Okay.
white earlier work. And
Yeah.
then I actually did A Girl in Her Room. It became a book, and I did. And then so I usually kind of almost work in a linear way manner where I'm focusing on girls and women following the ages of my daughters as they're growing up. So for me, in a way, it's a way of dealing with the passing of time with my daughters growing up, which means I'm getting older and all of that. And that's
Right.
been mainly my focus in my work. But then in 2014, when I was in Lebanon, I started noticing all these children on the streets, begging or selling trinkets or Kleenex or shining shoes. And it was very poignant and overwhelming for me. This was before the news about refugees was exploding all over the media. So it was experiencing firsthand something that was happening without it having kind of a name yet of what it was. And I started talking to those children, and the first boy I talked to was like the age of my son, and I realized my kid is in college, in school, and I know where he is because he has a phone. So if he, you know, and these kids are on the street, and they shouldn't, well, should, they should be at school. And I mean, for me, it was like almost like a lost generation. Like, what's going to happen to those children? Instead of being at school, they were on the street without their parents around. So I became interested in talking to them and knowing their stories. And ironically, I quickly find out their stories were eerily similar, where they fled Syria with their mother. The father was fighting. They didn't even know who he was fighting for or was already killed. So it was a common story that kept appearing. And basically, they were Syrian refugees, and they were over a million of them by then in Lebanon. And people in Lebanon, I mean, Lebanon was having his own economical, political issues. It was problematic for the country. So a lot of people were angry, and I realized that they would push them away. So I found a lot of these kids often standing in front of these incredibly ornate, sophisticated, layered walls of whether it's graffiti or different billboards over time. And there was something eerie about it for me. Like, it looked like these kids were another layer on that wall of history. Like, these walls witnessed so much history, had so much texture, and these kids looked like they were the latest layer on it. At the same time, and they're anonymous. Like, when you hear afterwards, when as you start hearing in the news about the refugees, you hear about the million. And for me, it was important to just look at the individual, because that could be anybody. That could be my kid, so I photographed them kind of in a portrait, straightforward manner, putting them in the center of the frame in a way to give them their individuality and their dignity. At the same time, because they're surrounded with all this graffiti, so there's this duality of them becoming also kind of invisible and anonymous at this. So I've tried to work with both of that at the same time.
Yeah, I mean, I thought that was really interesting. I don't know if Jordan would agree, but when I was looking at the photographs from Invisible Children, and I was reading your project statement, and you say that, you say that the kids and the teens seem to blend with the graffiti and they became invisible. They're like a new layer of history, and you wanted to give them that individuality. And I just thought, as I was looking at the photos, it's so interesting because the the way you position them, some of them, I feel like you were calculated about it, that their clothing almost blends in with the color of the graffiti as well. So it looks as though they are a part of the wall, but the fact that you're focusing on them and giving them and offering them a portrait, you're giving them that agency that usually, if I were a bystander, which I have been on several accounts walking past those streets and having ignored those children, I wouldn't notice them. But through your photography, you create that agency for them, I think.
Yeah, thank you for saying that. And the irony of it is I didn't, it's not something like I didn't dress them for this. Like, what I mean? I'm finding them there. And there was something kind of almost strange about, and at first I was really photographing them where I found them. And when I realized what was happening, I owned up to it a little more, where I might cross the street with them or go to a different spot within the perimeter. I mean, I wasn't taking them anywhere. I mean, I don't have that right at all. And it was, it was kind of a pretty incredible experience. I mean, I tried to, after we did that, buy them food or buy them something. And sometimes, I couldn't because I didn't have the time when I wanted them to buy food. So I would give them money, but I was careful not to do it as an exchange
or
a picture, because it was more like, I'm human after all, and these kids need to eat. I mean, that, or drink water. I mean, that was, and so if I was able to, I'd rather buy it myself, but sometimes there was no store like right next to me, or else I had to be somewhere or whatever.
Of course, yeah.
So I would, so I tried to do that. And so anyway, it was very touching. I think over time, the kids became much more suspicious because, they would, I think many people started to photograph them for different reasons, I want to say. And so, but the one thing they asked me is that please don't put it on TV. So at some point CNN asked me if they could put these pictures, and I'm like, sorry, these kids, that was the one thing I promised them. These pictures would not go on TV.
Right. Yeah. I think that's incredible. I didn't know that was a promise that you made to them, but I mean, it's true.
I think they're scared. And then another interesting about those kids, I mean, they're very street smart. So there was a little girl one time, I photographed her and I went to buy her water and I saw her talking to a man, and all of a sudden, like a young man, and he said, okay, bye. And I told her, you just told me your name was Samira. And she kind of comes to me and she was like, my name is Samira, I'm lying to him. And I'm like, you're lying to me too. Right? And you know what? So I wrote the name that they gave me, which I believe most of the time was not the real name.
Yeah. And I saw that in your captions.
Yeah. If this is the way they need to protect themselves, I 100% understand it.
Right. Of course. Yeah. And some of them, I think some of the captions, some of them didn't even know their age when you were
taking. One of them, his name, I remember the kids very much because he really touched me. His name was Sleiman, and he didn't know his age. And that for me almost made me cry right there.
Yeah.
And I tried to find him again and I couldn't. So I don't know what happened to those kids. There was a girl who I saw, I don't know if you noticed on the website, there's a couple of kids that I re-photographed a couple of years later.
I did,
And it was actually a strange experience because on some level I was so happy to see them because I like okay, they're still safe. But at the same time, I'm like, oh my God, this is 2 years later, they're still on the street.
Yeah, still in the same place you found them.
It was very bittersweet.
Yeah, for sure. Jordan, do you have any thoughts about this series?
Well, one thing that I was thinking about with this series when you brought it up, and then just in general with a lot of your other works too. So you mentioned how you got started in architecture, and I feel like looking at your photographs, you can really see that. Like I've just noticed the framing of a lot of the works is really, it really stands out to me and is really wonderful and interesting. And so I was just wondering how much does architecture still play into the photography, like through your different series, and whether it is like, whether you're making explicit choices with how you're framing some of the people, or if it kind of creeps up like subconsciously almost.
You know, in all my work, I am, it's an architecture training, and it's like, I don't know if you have any friends who went to architecture school. You're like, live it, and that's all you do for 5 years.
Yeah.
And then beyond, right?
Right.
And so it's a visual training that so much is part of me that I don't think about it anymore, but I'm glad you noticed it, because the framing of each photograph is very important to me. And not only in that series, I think in every one of my pictures, yeah. Even the new picture I'm working with the windows, or the one on her room, or the woman outside. So I'm very aware about everything in the frame, and and I'm aware of the texture and the light and all that. And that's something that's part of me. I'm always, like, I'm careful about my lines with the frame, if they are parallel to the frame or not. I'm careful about what's in the frame, because ultimately, even if I'm photographing a person and I'm focusing on this person, I'm looking after that on a two-dimensional object, right? And anything in the background is now part of that piece of art. So, so I kind of try to be very deliberate about what goes in the frame. And I work without a tripod and without extra lighting. So it gives me a lot of flexibility to move around.
That is very impressive.
I want to.
Yeah.
So, I like having that
mobility.
Flexibility. And the
mobility.
And I don't even change lenses. I work with one. I mean, if you see my equipment, is almost embarrassing. I have my camera.
No, not at all.
So I don't change. I have my camera and film. And now with my latest project, I'm doing it with the digital, but that's all I have, is the camera with the same lens. And I feel like,
I mean, it's often with the simplicity that you get all the beauty.
Yeah.
That's all you need. Yeah.
And I try to teach that. Like, I want the kids, the students, to always to try, because they show me picture and they're all different sizes and everything, and they crop it. I'm like, you know, I want you at first, as an exercise, to just look at the frame as if this is going to be your image, and not to go home and start cropping the image, you know? So it's just to get this visual training, basically.
Right. Absolutely. So before we move on some other series, I did have one more question about this. I'm someone, and our listeners know this, as a future scholar, I do want to focus on art of the Middle East, of the Arab region, and specifically, you know, our country. But it's something I struggle with on a daily basis. I feel this moral obligation to paint a beautiful picture of Lebanon sometimes, but it's so easy to get angry, frustrated, you know, defeated with everything going on, especially now. And I was wondering, like, as someone with that dual identity as well, being primarily in the US now, how do you find that balance with your work and depicting the imagery? And you also recently visited.
It's a very good question. And I know that I have Lebanese friends who were pretty upset about my earlier work, Ordinary Lives, because, you know, they want to portray Lebanon as the Paris of the Middle East, that sadly, in many ways, I wish it still were.
Yeah, it's no longer the case.
It's no longer the case. And I feel like we often talk about it like it's the elephant in the room, the refugees and all of that. And I wanted to address it like right up front. And I had my first exhibition in Lebanon. I was actually very nervous about how it was going to get received. And I was really happy about how people really were willing to look at pictures of the war and all that, and see actually that I'm focusing on the humanity and the beauty, even though I'm willing to look at the problems, if I want to say that.
Yeah.
Does that make sense? But with the, to also answer this question, another thing that I struggled with, and I was, that's important to me, I feel like, especially after, this made me a photographer, the whole September 11 rhetoric of them and us, that's what really made me run with this and stay a photographer.
Yeah.
Because I, especially the way women are always represented. And for me, that's, I strive more about showing that other side than anything else, you know, because I'm a woman from the Middle East, and I've never felt oppressed or like a second-class citizen growing up in Lebanon. I mean, I lost my mom very young, and I grew up with a father who made me feel like I could be whoever I want.
Right.
And so I said, there's the whole spectrum, and not every Middle Eastern woman is veiled and oppressed and uneducated, and, you know, and many women who are veiled are in college. So it's like, there were so many layers that it was important for me to show that.
Right.
So I had a few images of a girl in her room in an exhibition titled She Who Tells the Story, Women Photographers from Iran and the Arab World.
Mm.
And when I first went to see it, it was at the Museum of Fine Arts in Boston, which was such a big deal for me. And when I went to see it, I'm like, oh my God, everybody has such a political statement. And here I am, I'm showing girls in their rooms. And then I confirmed that, you know what? It was important. A lot of the work had to do with wars and struggles and the veil. And you know, at the same time, women are women, girls are girls, growing up to be women. And there was a picture specific that people would come to the curator and kept asking her, but there's no way we thought this show was about Arab women. And she said, it is about Arab women. She said, but there's no way this is an Arab woman. And this was the woman that became the cover of my second book, of A Girl in Her Room. So she has this big Marilyn Monroe behind her, and she's kind of has blonde, maybe fake blonde hair. Yeah.
I have the book, so I know what you're talking about.
So so people would get into an argument, this cannot be a Lebanese woman. And then I realized I owned up, like, you know what? It was important to have my work in this show, because what is an Arab woman? It could be so many layers. And so for me, that was something that became important in my work, actually.
Mm-hmm.
All my images, all my projects moving forward include girls and women in the Middle East, in the US, and in my books and in my exhibition, they're typically mixed in. Sometimes you could tell where it is, sometimes you cannot tell where it is.
Yeah.
And so that's important. Another thing, sorry,
to answer. No, you're good. Keep going.
About wanting to struggle about how to show Lebanon. I went to Lebanon twice since the explosions of August 4. And part of me thought I wanted to photograph what happened in the explosions. Mm-hmm. And then I realized that actually I'm not interested in that at all.
Yeah.
Because what for me was also beautiful was that there was all this, the young generation, for me it was through women who kind of still believe in that country and they're holding on to it. And that for me was more important than focusing on the destruction. Not that I want to ignore it in any way, but I feel like
no, definitely,
there was for me a better important, like there was a humanity for me that keeps shining through no matter what happens.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, you want to see the destruction, you can go on TV.
I went to see the destruction. I mean, it was actually horrible to see it. And it's overwhelming to see how much has been rebuilt so fast, and none of it by the government.
Oh, yeah.
By the young generation and by volunteers. And it's pretty incredible.
Yeah. I mean, the when it happened, just seeing all of my friends on the streets and family just trying to clean up. It's such a...
Yeah.
And your son is volunteering now, and he decided to stay there. Now. Yeah.
I mean, right now the country's on total lockdown, and he had COVID last week, but
oh gosh.
You know what? I'm almost glad, because now we're done with it, because I was in a constant state of worrying about him getting it, and now done.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, I mean, it's such a hard thing, but on the topic of women and girls, especially there, I think that's a great segue to go into your She series, which you actually have a book upcoming for that series as well.
Yes.
So I think it would be great to talk about that next.
So this project actually, in some weird way, the way, you know, the exhibition you saw of my work of the aftermath, it traveled after the Harn. It went to the Gund Gallery at Kenyon College.
Mm-hmm.
And they invited me to come as an artist in residence because of that exhibition. So we're going full circle now. And they wanted me to come for 2 weeks. And I said, I have my kids and my family. I cannot do that. And I'm grateful for many reasons that they were willing then to work with me, in the sense that I made many short trips. And I fell in love with the Ohio landscape. Mm-hmm. And I realized, because they were not very explicit about what I'm doing. So it was also talking about the exhibition, talking to classes, but they also wanted me to make work. So it was fantastic. And and I started photographing young women in that gorgeous landscape that that I discovered there. And I realized, you know, these are also the ages of my kids, my daughters, who have left home by then. And most of my work up to that point was very much in the domestic space. And then here I'm photographing them in that transitional space in the outside world that they're making their own.
Right.
So the work started there, and it became, and I had been losing my hair at that time. It came back. I didn't know what it was, but I became obsessed with our own texture and our physicality. Yeah.
And I remember you mentioning that in a talk.
Yeah, and I realized how hard it is to be 20 today. And so I wanted these women to be, you know, with being glued to their phones, and there's an alternate life happening on the phone. So I wanted these women to have advocate, to be very, to have agency of that process as well.
Right.
So the process became a collaboration. Mm-hmm. And of course, I took it to Lebanon as well. And in Lebanon, so going back to Invisible Children, a lot of that texture were these, in these walls, the city walls that are really pretty incredible, that I have to say I took for granted and never really saw if it weren't for the Invisible Children. So again, to go back to that. So I started photographing women in Lebanon as well. Mm-hmm. And the project kept growing, and it... I was honored to get a Guggenheim Fellowship for this work. So I was able to, and at the same time, my youngest son went to college. So I was a brand new empty nester with a Guggenheim in hand. So I was able to travel more within the country and more within the Middle East to make more work.
Yeah, I mean, it's such a beautiful series. And I think that especially for me, because I started looking at these images from the She series, especially those you took of Lebanese women or Arab women. I mean, they were all similar ages as me, and photographing them in that landscape of Beirut or of the beaches, or, you know, all these places that I took for granted a lot of the time growing up, it just made me see them in such a different light. And we're going to be posting many of these images. They'll be up when the episode is out. A lot of them will be of Beirut, but I did include specifically a photograph of Raven because I just love the story behind that photograph. And I figured you could share that with the listeners as well.
Yeah, it's actually one. You know what? I think you should probably include from both. I think you should include pictures not only from Lebanon.
Yeah.
So that's actually, the whole story was beautiful on so many levels of Raven's picture. I was on spring break with my daughter in Miami, and on our last day together, and we were gonna have brunch together, and then she was leaving to meet her friends, and I had a whole afternoon to myself and was traveling back to Boston that evening. Mm-hmm. And as we're waiting to be seated, I see this big head of hair in front of me, and and I literally like knocked on her shoulder, and she turns around, and I'm like, I'd love to photograph you, just like bam. And she was like, okay. And then I realized, you know, she's black and albino and stunningly beautiful. And so I told her, but I'm traveling today and I don't have my camera. It's like, no problem, I don't have anything going on. So after we ate, we went to my hotel, I picked up the camera, my daughter left, and I had a couple of hours with Raven at the beach. And it was, you know, the worst time of day to photograph outside is usually like the noon, midday hours.
Right.
Somehow the sky was gray, the sea, like it didn't look like Miami usually, and it was a gift from the gods for me. All of it was serendipity. Raven was from Wichita, Kansas, and kind of we intersected in Miami, and at a certain time, and we had a fantastic collaboration together, and it's one of my favorite images. And then it also helped my project move in different ways, is that this picture got picked to be part of an exhibition at the National Museum of Women and the Arts called Live Dangerously. And I love that the curators saw that in this work, because I ran with it a little bit. So I started, the project evolved in a way where the women were not anymore in any way passive in the landscape, but they were having agency over it. We were climbing on rocks or going to destroyed buildings in Lebanon left over from the war. I mean, we started taking risks on both sides of the camera, and the project evolved quite a bit. And the other thing about this photo is when I texted Raven to tell her your picture is going to be at the museum, and thank you so much for being part of this project.
Yeah.
And she said, thank you for seeing the beauty in me, which for me, like, was so touching. And then she eventually managed to go to DC and to see her photograph, and she, aww, I have a picture of her standing next to it.
So that's amazing. I mean, it's, you look at the photograph and you wouldn't think that there were issues with lighting or with it being gray at all. I mean, it's so vibrant and it's stunning, and she's stunning. So yeah. I mean, it came out so incredible. But I think that it's so impressive to me that you're just so dedicated to this relationship between photographer and subject, that you constantly want to have that relationship with the person you're photographing. You want them to engage as well. And that, I feel like that's a theme in your entire body of work. So what kind of influenced that, and why is it something that you prioritize?
You know, I don't take it for granted that people agree to be photographed. I mean, right. It's people are trusting me, and I feel like I need to give back to them. You know, I mean, yeah. And I honestly see it, maybe because I'm a mom as well, and I see how hard it is, mm-hmm, in so many ways to be growing up and all of that. And so I wanted this to be a fun moment. And I think we share a very intense, intimate relationship during the pictures. I mean, as I'm making this picture, this person in front of me is the most important person in the world at that time. Right. So there's this relation that's developed. Most of the time, I don't know any of those people before. They're not models. I'm not paying them. Yeah. So there's something that's being created, that's pretty intimate, and we share a very special moment. And I don't want to just make the picture and disappear. I mean, I feel like it's nice for me to tell them if the picture is exhibited somewhere, mm-hmm, to send them my favorite picture. You know, if I put on Instagram, to tag them, and I feel it makes them feel special. And so, mm-hmm, it's a way of giving back a little bit.
That's great. I mean, it's such a beautiful thing. And definitely, I feel like sometimes we take for granted with photography the person that is actually being photographed and the time and effort they put in as well. So I think the fact that you create that intimate relationship with them before, during, and after is so important. And I think it's also a good segue into Across Windows, because I feel like that relationship was challenged a little with COVID. Yeah. And you were able to still make it work. So I don't know if you want to tell people about this ongoing series.
Yeah, it was actually kind of, you know, I'm a social person and I love working with people, and I get restless. So it was the first 2 weeks of the lockdown and back, mm-hmm, in March, I actually welcomed that, because as I said, I had been traveling a lot to make this work, and all of a sudden I'm stuck at home. Yeah. So I made tons of little prints. I spread them all over my studio, and I'm like, I'm going to start editing for my book. And I started realizing how many pictures I had of that had to do with the sense of inside and outside. And, mm-hmm, and at the same time, I had 6 young adults at the house. All my kids were back home, plus, 2 of their cousins. So I was in my kitchen a lot, and I would be full staring house, out, yeah, my window into my neighbor's window across my yard and hers. Mm-hmm. And I just had this aha moment that, you know what, I should do this. So I put a call on Instagram if anybody would like to be photographed at their window, as long as they live within a driving distance from me, that I'm happy to go. And I got an incredible response, which kind of made me realize how everybody is craving that connection. Mm-hmm. So I went in there at first thinking I'm going to, you know, just drive around, take a quick picture and move on. And then I realized that's not how I work. And then here people had time. Yeah. Nobody was going anywhere. So there was something beautiful, because nobody was rushed. I wasn't and they weren't.
Right.
So every encounter turned into a real photo shoot in a way. So even though the challenge for me is like, even though there's a barrier, how do I keep that happening?
Right.
But somehow it did. I mean, you realize that sometimes you don't need to just be talking to connect with somebody, right? And
absolutely.
So anyway, so yeah, so this project evolved, and eventually people start connecting me to their neighbors, to their sisters, to their cousin. And at first I thought, you know, we all thought this was going to be like a month or something like that. So I was, mm-hmm, packing it. Like I tried to photograph as many people as I know. And here, yeah, we are almost a year later now, we're still in this. So
it's crazy.
Now I'm photographing people as they come, not on an urgency level, but, mm-hmm, I want to photograph enough so I could show the passing of time.
Yeah. I mean, it's very impressive. And I think that one of the things I really admire about this series is that, you know, you create that intimate relationship, even if you're just communicating with them through a window. But also, it's just, there's only so much you can do with social distancing limitations to, you know, have them positioned in a certain way. So you just kind of let go of that control as an artist and let them kind of, I guess, pose as they want, unless you know, want some adjustment.
I did, which was, I did. And at the same time, I had to direct them a little bit because depending on where I'm standing and where they're standing and how the light is hitting the window, sometimes the window turns into a mirror and I don't see the person at all. Yeah. So I had to move myself or like if they're wearing something bright that's reflecting everything. So I had to work a little bit with how to make it work. So it was actually interesting, which is actually, and I think it's important in portraiture that there was this back and forth a little bit.
Yeah.
And it was a lot of hands gesturing. And sometimes we both had our phone on speakerphone. Sometimes there would be a window on the other side that was open. So somehow we managed in a pretty cool.
You made it work. Yeah.
It worked. Yeah.
Exactly. I mean, and also specifically when you're talking about the window as a mirror, that is something you say in your project statement that you wanted to convey the outside that that person you're photographing is looking at while also capturing that person. So kind of just merging the two of them.
Yeah, even though it felt like our lives were so blurred back then, you know, like everything was blurred, which still is.
Yeah.
But so here's this person inside and I'm seeing all the outside reflecting on them. So in some level, this project became almost like my she project, even though the person is inside, but I'm photographing them, the relationship to the outside, because it's reflecting on the window.
Right.
So there was something kind of interesting happening and something that's almost the opposite of photography. Like when it's so bright, the person disappears. So I had to like find a tree or something dark that's being reflected because then the person appears again.
Could be seen, yeah. So and it's very interesting. And I think, you know, the way Jordan mentioned about your use of your kind of subconsciously using your training in architecture, I think that's very, very apparent in Across Windows, just because of the way you frame them in the photo, whether it's framing them through the house or their window and they're looking out from it. I think that that kind of training shows up, especially in these photographs. I don't know probably. If you agree.
And it became, it's interesting as well, like what the window means and that kind of frame within a frame that at first there was this heaviness and people were just like welcoming me in their pajamas or whatever they were wearing.
Right.
And that was part of the story. And as this became the new normal, people started dressing up and performing inside the window. So I feel like this whole, the architecture is involved in a literal way here, right? Mm-hmm. And there's like a frame within a frame that the person is in it, kind of reacting to me on the other side of it. So there was something, a lot of kind of an interesting dynamic happening there.
Right. I mean, so for anyone who's in Gainesville, there's currently an exhibition at the Harn called Breaking the Frame, and it celebrates women artists. And some of the photographs from Across Windows are actually exhibited there right now. And I walked in there one day and I was talking to Carol about it. And we were having this conversation about how, you know, some of the photographs, especially the early ones, they didn't really dress up for you. They just, you know, come as you are kind of thing. Yeah. It was very raw and it was very much in relation to what was going on at the time at the beginning of lockdown. But then people started getting dressed up and they started putting on that performance for you. So how did you feel about that? Do you have like a preference of either way, or did you just like that people started taking it more seriously?
No, I think I like the combination of both because I think it tells us to what we're living in a way, right?
Yeah.
And then I owned up to it. Like I went to a woman and there was all these pink flowers reflected onto the window. And I had no way to move. And that vase was like probably 3 tons. I couldn't move it. So pink flowers were part of the photo. So at some point I'm like, oh my God, do you have a pink dress to wear?
Mm.
So she went and changed to a pink dress. So it became again, something that, you know, evolved with the project. And another thing that you notice is early on, you know, it's kind of, it was like early spring here, like, you know, where it was very gray and cold. And as the project evolved, also it, there was this summer, then like the greenery was reflected right. through the windows and the flowers.
Yeah.
And in a way that makes people also want to dress up even if they're home. Yeah. So there was exactly. a little bit of that happening, which I thought was important part of the story. And there's a woman I photographed when she was pregnant.
Yes. I will be sharing
her after she had the baby.
Yeah.
But I re-photographed her over Christmas with the Christmas tree inside. I mean, aww. So that was like the baby's first Christmas and we're still in this. So that's a nice part of the story to see right. the tree with
them. It is something that's constantly unfolding.
Yeah. And now if we're still in this, I might go visit some of the, you know, the more iconic pictures and go re-photograph mm-hmm.
and see how they're doing. Yeah. And take pictures of them. That's, yeah, that's, I mean, that's beautiful. And I mean, it's kind of this bittersweet thing where you hope that you can photograph them outside and that COVID will eventually calm down. But if yeah. not, you can still.
No, I think I want to go back to their window.
Like their windows, like yeah.
the tango couple, you know, there's on top of each other. They are tango
yes, dancers. Yeah.
And like, I don't know, there are a few people who, some of the images who became the important, I'd love to go a year later mm-hmm. and see what the difference yeah. after a year into this.
Absolutely. I mean, is it, and I mean, photographing with windows and with like with houses and this kind of private space, do you think that's something even post COVID that you'd be interested in continuing to explore in other work? Or
I don't know, I've been asked that and I'm not sure. I mean, mm-hmm. I'm still kind of adding still to my She project. I mean, it's getting published yeah. into a book, but I feel like I'm not done with this work. It could be a second right. book at some point. You know, I kind of work a little intuitively. I mean, I come mm-hmm. up and then it turns into a project. So I'm not sure what is next, but I feel
whatever
like
happens, at this happens. Point,
we're still in COVID. So I think this is still part of that story. Yeah. So even though I'm not super aggressively making this work, but mm-hmm. I'm like, I photographed 2 weeks ago in New York because I was there. I mean, mm-hmm. I'm not taking a train or a plane. We drove there.
Drove my dog there, is there.
Yeah. A Palestinian 59-year-old drag queen. And I loved it because the first picture was he was a man and I wanted the second picture, he's dressed as a woman.
Mm-hmm.
I want to also show them together. Like people are living their lives in their homes.
Yeah, that's amazing. Yeah, I mean, I guess whatever happens, happens. And I'm very excited to continue seeing what you share on social media and what you do and like whatever you post. I mean,
thank you.
Be a very, very admirable follower through and through. So
how far are you from the Cornell Fine Arts Museum? Because I have an exhibition.
So for those listening, Cornell Fine Arts Museum is in Florida. I'm about a couple hours away from there. So I do want to make the trip to go see your work there. So
I'll let you know if I go, because I was supposed to go for the opening and that got canceled because
COVID. Right, yeah, because of COVID.
So I'm hoping to go see the show.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, if you, whenever you're in Florida, let me know.
Okay.
But this was wonderful. I mean, I've been looking forward to this for weeks now. So thank you so much for being here and for talking to us and to all the listeners. For everyone who was listening, all the images will be on our Instagram and Twitter, which is major_musings. And you can follow Rania. I'll put all of her links and resources on our link tree so you can access her as well and see what she's doing. And when is your book, She, going to be published? Do you know?
Well, we're working on it now, officially mm-hmm. late spring, but things are always taking longer.
Up in the air, COVID, yeah.
But for now, we're still saying late spring, but it's available on my publisher's website. It's published by Radius.
Oh, okay, perfect. So people can check that out. I'll add a link to it. But
thank
you so much again. It was wonderful talking to you.
Thank you, Maria, and thank you to Jordan. And it was lovely. Thank you for thinking of me and my work for this.
Of course. Yeah, absolutely. Thank you for being here.
And if I come to Florida, I'll photograph you either from your window or part of my She project.
Gosh. I would be honored. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Maria.
All right. Okay. Bye.
Bye.
All right, so that was our interview with Rania Matar. I had such a great time talking to her and, you know, getting to learn more through her eyes and just everything that she had to say about it. I think that, I don't know, I think it's just always such a special opportunity when you have the artists with you to have that conversation with them. So I hope we can do more of this in the future. And a huge, huge thank you to Rania for being a part of this with us. Once again, everything will be available on our link tree, everything that was mentioned, including her upcoming book project, her own link tree, and her website. You can access all the images on our Instagram and on our Twitter. I'm just going to hand it off to Jordan now so that she can tell us what she's talking about next.
Yeah, so next week I'm going to be talking about the Chilean artist Melina Slam. She pretty much works in video, doing film, and she does some really cool stuff related to the landscape and the environment, and I also am very excited to talk about her next week. So it should be fun.
Perfect. I'm really excited to learn more about her. I've never heard of her before, so I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah.
So that concludes the episode. We hope everyone enjoyed, and we'll see you next time.
Take care, everyone. Bye.
Bye.